Hey Jenna. Oops. Hi Alana. Hi Jamie. Hi Elaine. Hey Tess. Hi Mindy. Hi Christina. Hi Giuseppe. Hi Lisa, hi Simona, hi Kim, hi Lauren, hi Cole, hi Rana, hey Linda, hi Rebecca, hi Nihal. Okay, maybe I can't say hi to everybody. People are coming on. Hi Colleen, hi Ray, hi Lisa. I always want to say hi to everybody. All right. We're starting a new module today. Breakthrough questioning skills. Yay! Before we get there, a couple of pieces. First of all, it was great to see some of you at our bonus monthly Q&A call yesterday. Such rich questions and shares. I'm excited that we have so many opportunities to connect this week. And I wanted to just share on Thursday. Let me make sure it's on Thursday because my days are off. On Thursday, yep, from 11 to 2 Eastern. We've got our workshop for new, I call it a workshop for new and tentative practitioners. And honestly, that's bad marketing for the class. I feel like I could come up with a better name. I want to encourage anyone who, definitely, if you're new to coaching or if you're new to this type of practice of going deeper, not just kind of consulting, that kind of thing. Please come. But also, if you are a practitioner who has fears about your practice, if you're like, what if I am not going to be good enough? I'm scared of harming people. I'm scared of this, whatever it is. It's a really great workshop to come to. We're going to be doing a lot in the 3 hours together. There's going to be a lot of participation. We're going to first do a bit of inner work, getting to some next layers of fears, of limiting beliefs, of feelings of hesitation, of feelings of, if you feel like you're holding yourself back in any way, etc., etc. And we're kind of see where it goes from there. We may do some practice coaching from there. I might do a demo. We might kind of go in another direction. It's really it'll probably be an intimate group of us, so I'll see what we need. But every cycle when I offer that workshop, it's always just so rich and beautiful. So if you're able to make it live, please do. Else did I want to mention? A couple of other things. The first is I know that there were tech issues on the last two cohort groups, I think, or but either way, I know there was some on the last. And I have to take full 100% responsibility for what happened on the last cohort call. It was my personal fault, and I'm so sorry about that. And I apologize to Imbal profusely. I was on the Zoom line. Somehow it did not register that you were all supposed to be on the Zoom line at that time. That is not ever going to happen again. That is one of those learn that lesson once and not ever again. But I did want to just apologize for that because I know that there was some confusion around that. And then the last piece I wanted to just mention is hopefully at this point, If you're working with a coaching partner in this program, that you've had a number of sessions. If you haven't yet, if you've kind of been a little timid, it's a great moment to start to jump in. And I guess a couple of things, and I shared some of this in the video in the Facebook group. I always share every cycle, but I think it's good to just remember, if you've committed to those partner calls, show up, commit, make sure that the calls get on the calendar and that you show up. You don't have to be best friends with your partner at all. Sometimes there are groups that just gel so deeply, and that's beautiful. However, there's just as much learning available if that doesn't happen too. Because remember, what you're there primarily for is for your skills and to stretch into your skills and lean into your skills and learn from each other. The other thing, I usually throw this out a little later in the program, and I don't know that we're quite there yet, but I'm just going to mention it. At some point, I always say, practice with other people too. It's awesome to have, if you have someone that you practice in the program throughout, and that works for some people. But for other people, it works to practice with different people throughout. There is so much value in coaching different personalities and different energies and people with different backgrounds. It's great practice to have. So even if you are in rhythm with your partner, my recommendation is go over the 18 sessions and do a couple of practice sessions with other people as well. And you can always look in, ask either the team, ask in the chat here, ask in the Facebook group. Use this container, like really use it as opportunity to practice and get exactly what you need. Will the Thursday workshop be recorded? Yes, it absolutely will. And there's value to listening to the recording for sure. Because it's more of a like workshop-y, it's best to come live to it, but you'll still receive a lot and be able to do the exercises and everything if you listen to the recording afterwards. Any other cues on any of this before we jump in? Okay. So we're starting our breakthrough questioning module today, and we'll have three sessions in this module today. And really, we're going to be looking, coming back to questioning throughout the whole entire program. But the module, the specific module, are these three calls. So today we're going to be looking at foundational principles and elements of powerful breakthrough questions. In our next class, we're going to look at lots of different types of questions and understand their purpose and their use and when to use them and how to use them. We'll look at different question sequences, a couple of different question sequences as well. Sometimes it's just kind of, there's certain sequences that work really well together. And then after those two training sessions, we'll have a breakthrough questioning practicum. One thing that I want to mention as we step in, I mentioned this in the beginning of the program, and I'm going to mention it again. The curriculum is really here to meet you exactly where you're at. So, and I'm saying this part for everybody. It's here to meet you where you're at, but I'm saying this particularly for the seasoned practitioners in our group. You're here because you want to go deeper, because you're on that journey of getting better and better, as I am. For example, as we step into our questioning module, I know that if you're a seasoned practitioner, you're already amazing at asking questions. You know how to ask breakthrough questions. You're probably just doing excellently with it. And pay attention because there is more here for you. Pay attention to the details that we look at. When you practice, whether it's with a practice partner, whether it's when you go into your client sessions, be on your edge. Find the pieces that we look at in our training sessions that are not as familiar to you. Or maybe you know them, but you haven't really been embodying them, and work on those. Don't just lean into what you already know. That's not why you're here, right? Stretch. I really want to invite you to stretch yourself with these skills. Okay. So, all that being said, why are questioning skills so important when it comes to doing transformational work with others and to doing effective work with our clients? Well, at the heart of being a masterful practitioner is masterful questioning. I really believe that you can't have one without the other. And the most effective questions have the ability to do the following. Number one, create awareness, right? As we looked at in our creating awareness module, primary way of creating awareness questions. Most effective and masterful coaching questions have the ability to access the client's intuition and inner wisdom and knowing. They have the ability to promote creativity and brainstorming and problem solving when appropriate. Really, really good and well-placed questions have the ability to empower clients to take responsibility for themselves, empower clients to take responsibility for themselves. Really good questions can create integrity and commitment, can help clients articulate their judgments, can create breakthroughs and new habits. And really good questions can also create deep, deep connection to self. One guiding principle that I really believe is at the heart of any session that we have with a client or any client container or any client relationship is this. Human beings are curious. Human beings are curious. Curiosity leads to learning. And questions versus statements, a lot of the times, often support a client to lean into and follow their curiosity. I know this is so obvious what I'm saying, but it's such an important principle for us to remember. Sometimes we, as practitioners, as clients, as humans, we can get so caught up in the need to know or the need to figure it out, when really the antidote or what's going to support a client to get to the next place isn't to figure out the answer, but to activate and follow curiosity. Now, in today's coaching and transformational industries, there are too many practitioners who consult in moments when coaching or asking questions, I should say, asking questions are required. Now, there's nothing wrong at all with consulting. And as we looked at in our Creating Awareness module, consulting is one form of creating awareness. I consult a lot in my work with clients. It's part of the service that I provide. I have certain knowledge or experience or wisdom or expertise that my clients are looking for. But that being said, a big mistake that practitioners make is that they default to consulting more than is actually helpful or supportive for the client. And in doing so, miss out on opportunities to ask questions that will actually create way more positive energy, way more motivation, way more excitement, way better ideas, brainstorming, than if we just simply share our expertise or our opinion on the matter. In situations that require questioning, when we default to consulting, then our clients miss out on the opportunity to answer a question. It might be the simplest question ever, but one that can create a huge difference. So again, learning for sure happens when we create awareness in all of the different ways that we looked at creating awareness in our last module. But we don't want to like be a one-hit practitioners that just stick with the kind of stating things versus asking things. We need to know the moments when learning is, it's going to be much more optimal to learn when that learning comes through questions, through self-discovery, through self-inquiry, through self-proclamation, and answering questions for oneself. Okay, simple enough, right? We all know this. However, as I said, it's really easy to fall into over consulting. I sometimes catch myself in it as well. So why does that happen? Well, there are a couple of reasons why practitioners can end up consulting when it's actually a much more optimal moment for a question. Here are some of those reasons. Discomfort with the learning process, or fear that the learning is going to take too long for the client. Right? Back to energetics, the moment that we, right? It's just like the moment we go into that fear, we're blocking ourselves. Here's another reason why practitioners sometimes overconsult: the need to sound smart or impress. I've been there. For sure. Sometimes it's about taking over responsibility, right? Also a playing field issue. When we have this internal drive to hero others, maybe because of our past patterning, we feel like we have to save them, we need to take that over responsibility. We're going to be less apt to ask questions and more apt to tell or consult. Another reason why we may end up consulting instead of questioning is if we don't trust that the client always knows best. Now, we may have certain expertise or wisdom that the client has, and it's helpful to share at the same time. And it's like, I think these two things can live together. At the same time, the client always knows what's best for them. Sometimes we default to consulting when a question is actually more appropriate, just because we've gotten too comfortable with our own wisdom. And sometimes we just forget. So take a moment and reflect on that. Are there moments where you might be taking shortcuts and just giving clients, feeding clients answers instead of providing them with the learning opportunity that only questions can provide? And I shouldn't say are there moments. Maybe it's like on a scale of 1 to 10, right? How much or how little are you doing that? And why, right? Maybe it's one of the reasons why I just answered. If you're not working with clients yet, you can relate this to your personal relationships too, right? Are you bringing this sense of curiosity when you're in conversation with a spouse, with a child, with a parent, with a friend, with someone on the other end of the line who's helping, whatever it is, right? Or even in conversation with yourself, in your relationship with yourself, are you just simply telling yourself how it is, or are you activating curiosity? Asking questions. Why, right? Whatever it is, why? Right, let's pause here. I'd love to hear voice to voice from a few of you. What's coming through so far? What are you noticing? What feels important? Rebecca.
I'm like laughing because you kind of said at the beginning, like we're going to meet you where you are. And that was with regards to really seasoned practitioners, but this is hitting that for me. So I talked to my beautiful coaching partner, Jenna, about this last week. And I was like, I have this client and she's not like she blew off a session and then she asked for all this additional support and I held my boundaries while freaking out about it and being like, I know that she knows the answer. Like, I can't, if I spoon feed her this answer, first of all, I'm going to be violating my own boundaries, which was the primary issue. But second of all, it was like, I just knew that she knew, and I had this knowing that she knew. And so it's been a couple of days, and I just heard from her, and she was like, she did what I knew she needed to do, which was ask for help and receive it. And then she's like, I'm so excited to like for our session today. And I'm like, cool. So bringing it all full circle, it's like by not heroing her or saving her, it allowed her to have the empowering experience of taking care of herself. So thanks for. Yeah, the opportunity to reflect on that.
Yeah, I got chills when you just said that last piece. And so well done, Rebecca, because it can be challenging, right, for us as practitioners to hold that line, whether it's the boundary for ourselves or because we know that it's going to be valuable for the client. And so I hear you were like navigating that, but you did it. And it sounds like you did it really beautifully and with great impact. Really nicely done. Holly.
I realized that I do that a lot because, well, not a lot, but when I feel lost, I don't know which direction to go. So I don't know what question to ask. And a lot of times it's because I didn't clarify what the client wanted to get out of the session or really what they wanted to get out of their question.
Yeah. So a couple of important pieces that you're sharing there. First of all, just even asking in the beginning and getting that clarity on the intention. So important, that curiosity. And then what is it? I just lost what you said before that. When you're feeling lost, it's like, right? It's like you're feeling lost. And then so all of a sudden, okay, so let me sit, tell things versus asking. So that's such a great like litmus marker that you have, or litmus test that you have for yourself, or marker that you can start to catch yourself in that, right? And my guess is, and this might be valuable for you to look at it, like to slow it down, but my guess is that what happens is you feel lost, and then you maybe a little bit inadequate because you feel lost. And so like the way to take control of the situation or whatever is to share the thing. And I'll just share, I just associate you so much with parenting that even every time you share, it makes me like relate whatever we're doing to parenting. And I know that that's what I do with my children. Like as soon as I feel lost, instead of having that sense of curiosity, it's like, no, this is the rule, or this is what we have to do, or you know, like do this, or you need to whatever, right? So I just share that also for your work and your clients and how this is applicable in so many areas. Thanks. Rana.
Hey, Joanna. Okay, I'm going to be kind of brutally honest here. As I was listening to you speak, I was reflecting on a very current dynamic with a family member who is also a client. So just to be totally transparent there, who is also in an enormous amount of physical pain while running her own business. I have stepped in to do some of that business management on her behalf. And we are also navigating a lot of grief, Joanna, as well, due to the recent loss of two beloved animals right now. One was about 2 weeks ago, and one was just this past Sunday afternoon.
I'm sorry.
So yeah, I'm trying not to lose it myself because I love these animals too. And I have my own relationship with them in a different way, of course. So there's my grief that's present too. And I don't want to just completely gloss over that. Yeah. And I'm allowing myself to have my moments. Part of what I've noticed myself, and I've noticed this in the past, but it's been a while, is, you know, this line between the coaching and the consulting, where, you know, I'm viewing consulting as, all right, I'm going to notice some things, assess some things, make some recommendations. Okay, client, go implement, right? While also navigating those coaching questions. And something I have noticed is where I can start to then feel my own sense of impatience, right? Where a client is perhaps continuing to perpetuate the same types of sabotaging behavior, which I am witnessing a boatload of right now, while also wanting to bring a whole lot of compassion and empathy to the situation. And I can clearly see that with some implementation of some consulting, we could like wrap up a whole bunch of nonsense real quick here, just to be blunt. Right? Yeah. And so that's what I'm feeling a little bit of a pull with here, is there, of course, all these energetics, right? And the practicals of this particular scenario. But I can definitely see where this could apply, not just in this situation, but, you know, working with larger teams and so on and so forth. And she's got some team members here as well that I'm going to be actually meeting and working with later this week.
Well, so that it's like
perfect. And I don't want to be all wrapped up in my impatience.
Yes. Yeah. 100%. So I'm glad you're just kind of like highlighting and bringing awareness to this. I think that's going to just help a lot with the impatience. Mm-hmm. And what I'll remind you of what you already know, there are moments for consulting, right? And these are the practical and this, that, and the other thing. What I have found is that the practical is often only as good as the energetics,
yeah.
Right? So sometimes the energetics are about or the inner or the questions, let's call them, are about working through the obstacles or the self-sabotage or the patterning or the resistance. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the questions are there to set the stage to open up the creativity and the vision and the awareness. And then you as the practitioner use that to make recommendations and set out the plan. Even if it's the same plan you may have set out before the questions, there's more of an openness and a receptivity to it. If curiosity has been activated and the client has expressed themselves and their inner wisdom and their creativity first. So I'll let you kind of mull with that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Simone is saying in the chat, overhelping is an old pattern of mine that I am so psyched to be working through. The awareness that it's not helpful and that it's in fact a habit and doesn't serve. Yes. Good. All right. Let's, oh wait. Okay, they're just reading the chat. So let's keep on going. And next week, we'll look at particular questions and question groups and types of questions. But what I want us to look at for the rest of today are, you know, what I would call elements of powerful breakthrough questions, kind of the building blocks, the DNA, or the mechanics of powerful breakthrough questions. So what makes powerful breakthrough questions, or what makes the best questions? First of all, this is really important. There's no formula. I really wish there was a formula, but there isn't. Masterful questioning is an art. And the reason why there isn't a formula is because there's so many different client situations and scenarios and client moods and client energies and client backgrounds, etc., right? And you want to take all of that into consideration when you go to ask a question. So this is back to what we looked at in our first or second session. Always coach the what based on the who. So I wish I could give you like an A plus B plus C formula or something like that, but that's not going to help. Instead, I can give you these elements and these kind of mechanics to be thinking about. The other thing just to note, as we start to look, and you know this, no skill that we look at here, whether it's questioning or anything else, exists in a vacuum. The most effective questions are based on deep listening, right? So it's, the questions are not separate from listening or creating awareness or energetics. They're all woven together. Okay. All that being said, first kind of principle, there's a question in the chat. Hold on. Can I give an example of what versus who questioning? I'm still fuzzy about coaching the what versus the who. Yeah, absolutely. So as an example, let's say you're working with a client and the issue that they want to work through is that they don't have enough time in their day and in their week. They get to the end of their day, they're not able to get through everything, they have a backload, they don't have enough time for themselves, etc. That's the what, right? The what is having an issue with time, don't have enough time. That's the what. We don't want to just just coach the what. We don't want to apply the same perspective to every client that brings forward this, even if it's the same issue, right? Like, I don't have an, by the time I get to the end of my day, I haven't gotten everything done. We want to take a look at the who. The who is going to inform how we proceed. For example, for one who, right, one client, as we explore and as we look and as we listen, we may see that maybe one of the biggest root causes of their time issue is organization. They are scattered throughout their day. They haven't made a plan. They don't know when they're going to be working on this, when they're working on that. They don't have boundaries, maybe with social media, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So we're going to approach that who on this issue in a very different way than as we listen to a different client, or even a different client in a different moment, right? Because whose can change in the same person. And as we listen to them, what becomes clear is one of the biggest root causes of not having enough time is that they're self-sabotaging, right? There's a fear of success or a fear of failure, or a belief, maybe a deep rooted limiting belief that they're just not good with time, or whatever it is. So that's the difference between coaching the what versus coaching the who. That makes sense, Ray? Okay. So when you ask questions, here are some things I want you to think about. Number one, don't expect any kind of particular answer or outcome. I know we all know this, right? And yet, how often do we forget? The moment that we become attached to a client answering a question in a particular way, that's the moment that we've killed our curiosity and our non-judgment. That's also the moment where we're probably going to stumble in articulating the most optimal or one of the most optimal questions for that moment. The other thing that can happen if we ask a question and we're expecting a particular answer or outcome is that we end up leading a little bit in the question asking. We'll talk a little bit more about that later, right? Also, what can happen if we're expecting a particular answer or outcome is if we get a different answer and we've been attached to the one, like what we think they're going to say or what they should say, it can throw you off, right? It can stop you in your tracks if you don't get the answer you were expecting. So much of what we look at here in Sacred Depths, whether it's listening skills or creating awareness skills or questioning skills, visioning, strategizing skills, it applies not just to our client sessions, but also to our enrollment conversations, our sales conversations. And I just bring that up here because the same thing goes in our sales conversations. If we ask a question in an enrollment conversation and we're attached to a particular kind of outcome or for a client to answer in a particular way, we're already not as effective as we could be in that sales process. To take this a step even further, not only do we not want to be attached to or expect any particular answer or outcome when we ask a question, but I would say we also don't want to even be attached to a particular coaching outcome, whether it's the outcome at the end of the session or the outcome at the end of the coaching. Of course, there are certain things, right? Marketing promises we make, etc. But the moment we get too attached to an outcome is the moment that we cut off other possibilities and other opportunities and something that might be even better. That makes sense? Yeah? Okay. So instead of being attached to a particular answer or expecting a particular answer or outcome, instead of that, how we want to orient ourselves, this is a little bit of energetics here, is to follow our intuition and our natural curiosity. When we are fully present to our client and to the session, and we're also following our curiosity, so much more is available and better questions get asked. Now, when I say follow your intuition and your natural curiosity, I want to be clear on what I mean by that. I don't mean just like open-ended curiosity, right? Like someone's talking about a date they went on and, you know, kind of the way we might with a friend, we want to hear all the, we're curious about the juicy details, right? Like that's like an open-ended intuition or curiosity. I'm talking about following your curiosity, but always with the end goal in mind. And again, not being attached to that end goal, but whatever our client has said they want to receive from the session. That will help put some guardrails on the intuition and on the curiosity so that you're following it, but it's not like so expansive that you're getting off track. So you can think of it in this following way. A good question is going to be rooted in the following things. Number one, listening to your client, being attuned to their needs, right? That presence and listening. Number two, keeping track of the bigger picture and the agenda. That is part of our job. Number three, being connected to our own intuition and curiosity. All right, let me pause there. Any questions on what I just shared? Again, it's simple, but it's something that we can forget or not always be aware of.
Joanna, I have a question.
Yeah, great.
So I always feel like I need to kind of control my curiosity to make sure that the questions I'm asking is moving in a therapeutic direction versus just I'm a nosy toad type of a question. And how do you allow the intuition to fully flow when you're also trying to keep a container around it?
Yeah, it's such a great question. So that goes back to the keeping track of the greater agenda. So if I get curious about something and I'm not sure, like in my mind, I'm like, is that on point or not? The next question I'll ask myself kind of quick, you know, is does this thing that I'm curious about, does it serve the greater agenda? You know, what the client really wants to ultimately receive. Sometimes I'll know the answer to that question immediately and I'll either go for it or I won't. Every now and again, I'm like, I'm not sure. And if that happens, I'll say to the client, you know, I'm curious about something. This may or may not be a relevant question. I'm going to ask it to you and you tell me if it feels important to go down this road. And then I'll ask the question. Is that helpful to think about it in that way?
It is. I like that last question, especially. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay. Okay, let's keep on going. This next piece is one of my favorites. Again, so obvious, but so easy to forget. Remember that your client always has a choice. When you go to ask a question, remember that your client always has a choice. Again, obvious one. However, can forget this so easily. So, for example, let's say a client says, my kids are complete messes. It doesn't matter what I do, they won't clean up. And by the way, I didn't just make that up, and I know that from real life, right? So the client in this situation may be coming from a place of not feeling they have a choice, right? My kids are complete messes, and it doesn't matter what I do, they're just not gonna clean up. But remember, the client always has a choice. So in this situation, think about this for a moment. What does the client actually have a choice about? And how can you use your questioning to open up choices for her? So it might be true that no matter what she does, her kids will never clean up. However, maybe the choice is around how she responds versus how she reacts to the situation. Maybe the choice there is about how she can feel differently about the situation or see the situation differently. Maybe the choice is about what she can do for herself in the situation, right? So you always want to think, you know, what are the questions that come from a philosophy of choice? Sometimes we can get caught up if a client is thinking that there are no choices, this is the way it is. Sometimes as practitioners, we can get caught up in that as well, right? So again, in order to keep a philosophy of choice open, you want to think about a couple of things. Number one, don't go into consulting mode, or at least not right away, right? So you may have a great trick to get kids to clean up. And if you do, please let me know, right? But you may like have a great consulting trick for that. But, and that may be appropriate at some point in the session, but before you go there, stick to questions first. Support the client to see either she has maybe a choice in how she is acting and what boundaries she's going to set, or again, like how she's reacting versus responding, what it's bringing up for that client, etc. Number two, we already said this, but again, this applies here in this as we think about choice as well. Don't be attached. The second you get attached to an outcome, then you're not going to be able to hold the space for the client to get what they need, right? So in this example, the moment you get attached to helping the client figure out how to get her kids to clean up, if you get attached to that, you're closing off other possibilities, opportunities for actually deeper learning, better parenting, better, you know, I don't know, boundaries, whatever it is. There may be a way for her kids to clean up, or there may not be, but you don't want to get attached to that. So when a client, you know, brings something up and they're maybe not coming from a place of choice, sometimes a really good next step is to ask the client, what would you like to receive around this issue, right? Very similar to intention setting at the beginning of a call, right? So again, the client says, my kids are messes, I can't get them to clean up. Well, don't assume that what the client is wanting is to figure out how to get her kids to clean up. Also, even if that is what the client is wanting, if you ask this question of what would you like to receive around this issue, something else might open up, right? Maybe the client will say, I'd like to feel at peace in my home, or I'd like to not be so angry at my kids all the time, or I'd like to feel like I have one space in the house that's just for me. Or what do I want to receive? I don't want to scream at my kids when I see a mess, right? So, another great question to ask when somebody presents something where they're not really seeing the choice. What's the growth opportunity for you here? Right? So, okay, you can't get your kids to clean up. What's the opportunity for you here? What's the growth here for you? Where do you have choice in this situation is another great question to ask, right? Just to even open up this idea. Where do you have choice in this situation? Here's another question that can open up choice. Is it true 100% of the time that no matter what you do, the kids won't clean up? That can open up different ideas. Now, in order to approach our clients and our questioning with a philosophy of choice, we have to practice it for ourselves. So let me ask you, on a scale of 1 to 10, how good are you at remembering that you have a choice in any matter and situation in your life? Scale of 1 to 10, how often do you remember that you are at choice? Mindy's saying it fluctuates depending on the situation. Same with me. What's one specific place in your life right now that you could approach with more of a choice philosophy? What's one specific place in your life right now that it would be really beneficial if you approached it with more of a choice philosophy? All right, let's pause here for a moment. I'd love to hear one, maybe two shares. What's coming up for you? What are you seeing? What questions do you have around this idea of remembering that your client or that you always has a choice? What's important here? What are you seeing? Rana.
Oh, this is really good and in such beautiful synchronicity to what I was just speaking about. And that place in my life and in my business is not just with this current dynamic I'm navigating right now, but it's time boundaries and having to be very clear about what my needs are around my own time, as I'm doing a lot of this both anding right now. And I really want to just thank my coaching partner Elaine, because she and I were having a conversation about this, and she reminded me of that, you know, how clarity is kindness. And I've really had to harness the power of that, of being super clear, at times very fierce, you know, with those boundaries. But I'm having a completely different experience over the last 48 hours by getting pretty fierce with those boundaries. And so I'm feeling better today.
Yay. I'm so happy to hear it. Love it. Thank you. Good. Libby is sharing in the chat, I have a motto. There are always more options out in the potential than I am aware of. I love that motto. And Mindy is saying that this conversation is a reminder to remind clients of their agency and their power, right? And for us to remember that clients have agency and power. Beautiful. Okay. So a little bit of homework this week, if this feels relevant for you. As you move through your week, notice the moments where you feel like you don't have choice, where you feel defeated, right? Oh, I need to work this much. I have to go do that. This will never change. You know, whatever that is for you. And remember this conversation as you call yourself out in those moments and ask yourself, what's the choice? What would you like to receive around this issue? Or what's the growth opportunity, right? Where do you have the choice? Okay, next principle. Be willing to be lovingly bold. Be willing to be lovingly bold. So what I mean by this, and it depends on the container, right? Like how bold, always coach the what based on the who, and also always coach the what a little bit based on the container. You know, I generally will be bolder with a client if we have a more established and tight container. Sometimes I'll be bold, really bold with a client on a first session for sure. But you know, the first couple sessions, the client, the container is still coming together, and you wanna kind of just be aware of that. But for me, boldness always comes with being loving, right? And being respectful and seeing the client as whole and complete and knowing that we're on equal ground. So I'll give you an example of what I mean by being lovingly bold. Let's say you've got a client and they share that they're working all the time. They're upset that they never have enough time for themselves, for their family, etc. So a good enough question in this situation might be, what can you do differently? What would help you make more time for yourself and your family? More of a breakthrough question that brings together a lot more of everything we've been talking about, but also maybe is a little bit bolder, might sound something like this. When did you start making work your top priority above everything else? Or if it feels okay to use the phrasing, the word addicted, because that's sometimes too bold, right? If it's a little too triggering for someone. But another lovingly bold question here is, why do you sense that you're addicted to work? So be willing to be lovingly bold. And again, the conditions for being lovingly bold is that you have a solid container, that there is trust in that container, a client that is somewhat aware of their own triggers. You never want to be lovingly bold if a client is already triggered. You want your energetics to be in place, right? If there's any fear of the client getting angry at you, I shouldn't say any, right? It's because there's always whatever fears, but if that's kind of reigning that fear, it's going to be harder to deliver something that's lovingly bold. And just along with that, I'll also share that in a really good coaching session or client session, there's usually at some point at least a little bit of tension. And what I mean by that is that you don't want your clients to always have the answer right away. Your questions should sometimes stump your client for a moment or longer. you do want your questions to sometimes challenge your client and to stretch them and challenge their assumptions. As a reminder, silence is a good thing almost all of the time, right? Sometimes as practitioners, we can ask a question and there's silence on the other end. 9.5 times out of 10, that silence is a good thing. It means something is moving, something, there's a reorientation happening, or something is emerging, a new way of seeing something, or something has hit them really hard in an important way. Okay. Let's talk about language for a little bit. And a lot of what I'm going to share next about language applies not only to questions, but to everything that we do, whether it's, you know, creating awareness, reflecting, you know, visioning, any of it. So first of all, and if you're a seasoned practitioner, this is probably one of the places that is good for you to work on, like to get into more of the crags of. It's a place that I'm always working on, not sometimes with success and sometimes not. Almost always, the best questions are succinct. They're clear and they're direct. Once you get like a lot of, sometimes a question just needs a lot of words every now and again. But for the most part, once you're starting to use a lot of words in a question, it's not as clear and direct and succinct as it could be. And it starts, the energy of it, the impact of it can start to get watered down a little bit. Also, again, there's always exceptions to the rule, but for the most part, you want to ask one question at a time. Sometimes, and I'm guilty of this sometimes as well, it's something I'm always working on. Sometimes we can forget and ask two questions at once, like double up on questions. Almost always, it's best to go question by question, give them space. Yeah, Simone is saying from our last class, let it land, exactly. Use, when you're asking questions, you wanna be conscious, and this goes back to listening skills, you wanna be conscious of the terminology that your client uses, and you wanna use your client's terminology, sometimes mixed with moments of new terminology, in order to create awareness. So let's break this piece down a little bit. Use clients' terminology. So when a client uses certain terms or certain phrases, when we incorporate that term or that phrase into the next question that we ask, we mirror the client's language. We spoke about mirroring in our creating awareness module. Then our client feels heard. They feel seen. They feel that we're curious and interested in them and in their world. So we want to use their terminology. And then sometimes adding a new phrase in that the client hasn't already used can help them go deeper and create new awarenesses. So for example, let me find the example here, because just earlier today I was leading a practicum in another cycle of sacred depths, and the volunteer client was talking about something that was related to their power. And the volunteer coach in the class, she asked a question back, and instead of using the word power, she used the phrase superpower, Right. So she, I mean, that was some of the client's terminology, and then she went deeper with it. When I say use the client's language and terminology, it can be the exact words or phrasing that they use. So, for example, if a client refers to the person that they're married to as their partner, or their significant other, you want to use that language back, right? You don't want to refer to their husband or their wife or whatever. You want to use that language that they use, right? So sometimes it can be about the using the exact words. But also, what I want you to think about when it comes to using clients' terminology, and the best way I can describe this is using what you know about their already established filters. So, terminology or language can also mean if you know that a client loves a particular book, for example, right? Using the language of that book, what would Jane Eyre do? I don't know, I just made that question up, right? Whatever it is. If you know they like a particular movie or a TV show, or they admire a certain famous person, if that has meaning in their world, if you know that your client is a yoga teacher or that yoga is a big part of their world and their practice, you might be talking about whatever, whatever it is, their business or their relationship or whatever, but maybe use the terminology of inversions, right? Or whatever it is. Generally, if I'm working with someone that has birthed a child, and they've shared with me that the birth was significant, when we're talking about their business, I will use birth metaphors. If you've got a client that's in a corporate setting, but you're talking about an issue with their family, you can use corporate terminology, like their family is their team, right? Using those metaphors, etc. Now, new terminology, just a little note on that. One practice that I have found really helpful that has allowed me over the years to, both in my questioning and just any way that I'm creating awareness, that has really helped me support clients to more breakthroughs, is to be conscious of expanding my own vocabulary. So, the more new words and new concepts that I learn, the more that I can bring them into my client conversations. A practice that can be helpful is when you're with a client to ask yourself, what concept would be most helpful next for this client? What concept might be most helpful next for this client, right? And then so I might be talking to a client and mention like metamorphosis or calcification or catastrophic thinking, right? I work that into the question. That's a concept that will create awareness that may be helpful next. The other thing, is using metaphors, right? So let's say you are in a session with a client and they're describing something that's happened to them, and they say, it's like a switch has been flipped, and it's just not like it was before, and blah, 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 right? Whatever it is, use that image of the switch being flipped, incorporated into a question, right? Well, what does the switch want you to know? Or what was the flip there? What was the on, what is the on button and what is the off button? Right? Stuff like that. A little bit more about language. think about, and let me pause here and say this. I know I'm giving a lot of information all at once, and I started this call by saying the curriculum is here to meet you where you're at. If you're totally new to questioning, to coaching, zero expectation, and it would be absurd and not helpful at all for you to incorporate every little last detail that I'm sharing right now. Pick one or two places to start and to practice with, right? The ones that feel most important to you. Everything that I'm sharing is gonna go in and seep into you and integrate, but you know, on the conscious level, don't feel like you need to master all of it. Pick one or two pieces. If you're a more seasoned practitioner, same thing. I'm sure a lot of what I'm sharing, you may know, but maybe you've forget it, right? And you realize it's important, or maybe there's details to it that you can lean into. All right, think about your word choices. So I'm gonna give you some example how one word or a phrase can make such a difference in a question and reflecting, whatever it is. Think about the difference between these two questions. What would feel empowering for you? Right, you're talking about a client, they've told you about a situation. You ask the question, what would feel empowering for you versus what would feel pleasurable for you? Now, you may choose empowering over pleasurable based on the client's intention for the call or something else they've said or something they've said in the past, or maybe you're working on empowerment or you're working on pleasure, whatever it is, or it might just be an intuitive sense, right, to choose one over the other. Or think about the difference between these two questions, just a little tweak in language. How do you know who your friends are versus how do you know who your trusted friends are, right? One question not better than the other, but it can change the impact, the meaning, or what awareness comes to the surface. Think about the difference between these next two questions. Again, just giving examples of the power of word choices. What can you do to move forward versus what will you do to move forward? I would use what can you do to move forward if some new awarenesses have come through. I'm sensing some inspiration to start to vision and strategize and take action, right? I'll say, what can you do to move forward? However, if I'm sensing the client is ready to go, and they're ready to be super clear, and they're ready to take a lot of action, I'm not gonna say, what can you do to move forward? I'm gonna say, what will you do to move forward? Okay. Another important piece when it comes to questioning and just when it comes to communicating in general, whatever you're communicating with clients, is think about your tone of voice. That's the pitch or the quality of your voice. Sometimes I'll get louder, sometimes I'll get softer, right, to emphasize certain things or create space around certain things. Think about your pacing, how fast or slow you speak. So much of what we looked at our last practicum was around pacing, right? And that can even happen within a particular question, slowing down or speeding up, how you ask the question. Rhythm, the flow and the melody of the words. Couple other pieces. I'm looking at time here. I've mentioned this before, but I just want to quickly mention again, be conscious of asking open-ended questions. So what can happen a lot for practitioners, I fall into this sometimes myself, is that we ask yes or no questions. Versus open-ended questions. Now, In general, open-ended questions are going to be more effective in terms of opening up choice, opening up brainstorming, solutions, access to intuition, etc. However, there are some instances where a yes or no question can be so powerful. And those are moments where a client is ready to make an internal or external decision. If you've been doing work in the session and the client is like, has worked with a fear or has had a breakthrough around a certain idea or, whatever it is, and they're in a moment where they are ready to make an internal or external decision, asking a yes or no question can help them clarify and validate and lean into their yes or lean into their no. Right, I know I'm moving quickly through this. A couple other pieces. Make sure that your questions aren't leading questions. They're not leading the client in a particular way. That's, usually if you're attached to an outcome or expecting a certain answer, that's going to happen. So, an example of a leading question is as follows. Let's say your client says, "I wish I wouldn't always miss deadlines at work." A leading question is, "Do you think it's because you procrastinate?" That's also a yes or no question, right? A non-leading question in that situation, "I wish I wouldn't always miss deadlines at work." Why do you think you miss your deadlines? Along with not leading, you also don't want to make assumptions. So let's say a client says, "This was a bad week with my partner. I said all the wrong things again." An assumption on the part of the coach might sound like this. "That seems to happen with you a lot. What's going on with that?" Right? Assuming that it's bad, right? That she did say the wrong things again, that there's negative impact there, that there's something wrong with it. Not making assumptions might sound like, "Tell me more about what happened." Or share with me more, like what are the things that you said and what motivated that? Here's another example of not making assumptions. Let's say your client says, "I want to take my business much bigger." Well, an assumption, if a client is assuming something, they might say, "Awesome, I'm so excited. And you're so ready for more clients and higher rates." But that's making an assumption that taking their business bigger means more clients and higher rates. A question coming from a non-assumption place is, first, you might reflect, "That sounds really exciting. What does bigger mean to you?" Even a question like that, if the client had one idea of what bigger means before they made the statement, a question like that will help them actually explore and get even clearer on what bigger means. All right, let me pause here. I know I'm sharing a lot. It's a lot of information today. This module is a little bit like that. What are you seeing? What's coming together? What feels important? Or what questions do you have? There's two other pieces I want us to look at today, but I just want to pause here for a moment. Anything anyone want to share? Or ask. Kim.
I just really like the nuances. Some of this sounds familiar because I think I took one of the breakthrough questioning
Yeah,
workshops.
you did too, yeah.
But
I just like the nuances of it because I do lean on the curious and the questioning, but I think I can sometimes do the leading of it because of the assumption of what the client means versus just having that awareness of wait, pause, ask them to clarify what they mean. And I have been practicing that a lot more and then lean into creating that awareness. But like a lot of the clients I tend to work with, and because they come more for the consulting first, tend to be like, I don't know. And so it can get frustrating when the client just keeps insisting they don't know versus you trying to ask all the questions to lead them to, but you do know, you know what you want to do, but they're so conditioned with not trusting themselves to make a choice because they're fearful. And so that's why I'm here, is to try to figure out how to do that more skillfully.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you're bringing this up. And what I'd also say is, if you are noticing that there is a pattern of them not trusting their inner wisdom, that's something to create awareness around and a place for possible exploration. Sometimes just the creating awareness around it can like correct it a little bit or move it to a place. Sometimes it needs a bigger exploration. It might need to befriend your fear. We'll get there. It might need a rewiring process. We'll get there. But yeah, like sometimes we can't just keep on, you know, if a client says, I don't know, or I can't, you know, then it's not a matter of, okay, what's a different way to language this question, but it is a matter of let's go deeper into the fear or the limiting beliefs or the myth of perfection or whatever it is. And to like create a culture in the container, like part of the energetics of the container to be, that this is about, this isn't just about my wisdom. This is part of my work here as the practitioner, is to support you in owning your wisdom. You know, so if you find, I guess what I'm trying to say is like, if you find that that happens with a lot of clients, that's something that I might pre-qualify, like bake into the very beginning of the container setting, both maybe I'm adding a question around it in the questionnaire, sharing it flat out in the welcome packet, in the first call, etc. So that doesn't mean it's not still going to come up, but so that there's the shared understanding that that's part of the work that you're doing together.
And I think that has been a focus, because there was the space of me learning to trust my own intuition and not doubt myself so much. And then now getting clear with clients who are the ones that are also in that same process, and I can support them with that, and who are the ones that are more very clear on what they want to do and don't need as much of that support. And you're right, it has been changing how I've been doing the enrollment and stuff like that, because they're both different energies, but it's important to identify it so that when they come in, they're clear on that, what they need to focus on. And that trust piece, what I've seen is that it's just really just giving themselves permission to do it the way they want to do it.
Yes. And that right there is such a gift for life.
Yeah.
Giving someone permission to know that they can do it the way they want to do it. It's huge. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the part that excites me the most.
Yes. Yes. For sure.
Thank you.
Thank you. I had a couple more pieces that I was going to share today, but I think I'm going to save it for next week because I don't want to just overload with so much. And there's so much in what we already looked at. So instead, before I give you homework, you've got a couple of different homework pieces. I'd love for you all to just take a moment and jot down, what are you taking away from our time together today? What feels really important for you? What are you seeing? And what questions are you left with? And I'd love to hear some shares on that. Nihal.
Hi.
Hi.
Good to see you. Thank you for this. I'm sorry, I'm a little under the weather. I wanted to just really settle and appreciate this support you're giving us to really tune into our intuition first as and presence and being present with the client in the moment as the top priority. As personally, I went through acupuncture school and I went like already kind of was oriented as a healer in a way. And then acupuncture school, it's like all these details and giant volumes you have to memorize. And then I couldn't find my magic in it for the longest time until it all integrated. And I feel like you're sparing us that pain by keeping us connected to our wisdom as we add these elements of the more specific questions and sequences. So I really want to honor and thank you for that.
You're so welcome. And I love how you put that. And I think how you put it is, I didn't even put it in this way. And I love how you're putting it that like the almost like the biggest foundation is that connection to intuition, connection to client, and then you can hang the details onto that, but have that be at the center of all of it. Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Who else? I'd love to hear voice to voice. One more person, Jamie.
I've been sitting with this, be willing to be lovingly bold and, underlined lovingly. And then you brought tone of voice and, there's a part of me as I listen to your tone of voice and your pacing, that's baked into everything. So I'm curious. I mean, I want to just keep following this thread of finding that for myself. And I don't know if, what the suggestions are around that or whether it's just feedback from co-coaching and things like that. I guess that's what I'm looking for is to do that. The other piece I'm really mindful of is the power of the coaching request for all of this, like all that permission that starts so early. And I've been in my coaching, that's been one of my weakest areas is to take advantage of really getting clear about what do you want to receive? I love that question. That was a new question for me. What do you want to receive? So that's what I'm taking away. I mean, I'm taking a bunch, but those are sort of the high level ones.
Yeah, I love that point. And just to work backwards, like, yes to that question, what do you want to receive? But I love how you just put it like that premise is baked in from the beginning, right? That it's client led, that this is about their intuition and not about our wisdom. I mean, of course it plays in, but, and how that, again, like how just that is a gift to most human beings, right? Because most of us are trained to think I can't trust myself. It's not about me finding the answer. I don't, right, all of that. In terms of the first piece that you mentioned, tell me if this resonates. One idea I have for you is maybe to do a little journaling or just even laundry list of if someone were to deliver a bold statement to you, how would you want it delivered? And to kind of start exploring there a little bit too. Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. And Jamie. Oh, sorry, and Simona. That was Jamie.
Hi. So actually this is to Jamie and but I just wanted to share with you just from getting to know you over this time. It's interesting to me that when and I if I may, well, actually, let me ask you if I may share a piece of feedback before I just, is that if you feel comfortable?
Sure, of course, yeah.
Okay, yeah, she's giving me a thumbs up. So general, that moment when you asked that question, so I could see the energy pause in your throat. And so I would say that part of asking a bold question might be specifically for you to clear that. And one of the ways you can do is just pull across your throat and open your mouth and let what your heart wants to say come through that channel instead of getting stuck here. This is just, if that's helpful.
I thought you were asking me if I was open to feedback.
No, that's I said anything bad.
I answered for you, Jamie.
Yeah. I hope that's an okay share. It was just right there.
Thank you so much, because that's not the first where I get stuck place. So thank you.
Beautiful. Simona, did you want to share anything else, or was that the...
That was what I was running to share, because I imagine she's not the only, even actually while we were talking, that some stuff got stuck for me. So I can't imagine we're the only two people who have that.
No, a lot of energy can get stuck in this area, and it has to do with speaking our truth and our boldness and our expression and our voice. So I love that share. And as always, thank you, Simona, for being our note taker. Okay, I know we're at time. You'll get a bunch. There's a lot of resource sheets for today. There are a couple things we didn't get to. I'll backtrack next week. But they're really self-explanatory. Just the one piece I want to share is in your coaching partner sessions, work on questioning. So take time to think about your questions. It's okay if you take some time to craft it out, really think about it. And then in the breakdown, discuss everything, but particularly talk about the questions that were asked, which questions worked, how you might make some questions better. I am thinking about all of you. I hope I will see, I know I'll see some of you on Thursday. I'm looking forward to that. And if you need anything, I'm here. Just let me know. Have a wonderful rest of your week.